Thank you for listening to this message from the pulpit of Coon Rapids Baptist Church in the suburbs of Minneapolis, Minnesota.
As we're beginning here in Job chapter number 9, I would note that my goal in starting this series was to maybe preach 15 messages or so on these 42 chapters. And then I get to this section. I was going to preach 8, 9, and 10 all together, but chapter number 9 is 35 verses, and 10 is another 22, so that was like 57 verses. And add that to the 22 verses before that, so that would have been 79 verses. Did I do that right? All in one sermon, and so I just can't. And so we might be in Job a little bit longer than what I hoped. But it was either, you know, just you guys being all zoned out by the time I got through 79 verses, or I really feel like I wouldn't be able to study it out and, be able to explain things to you. And I don't know about you, but I want to understand it. And I want to be able to grasp the flow of thought and, express a little bit of that to you. So what I want to do here by way of introduction is I want to remind us of where we're at in a little bit of the flow of thought. And so I need Job and three friends to help me. All right. So I need some people, some of the young people to come and help me with being Job and three friends. And one of them can be a silent friend. Okay. Caleb is going to come up. He's going to be one of the friends. This is great. Caleb's going to be one of the friends. And I need another friend. Anybody else want to be a friend? You want to be a friend, Logan? Okay, he's going to come out and be a friend. Okay, and Evan's going to be a friend. Very good. All right, why don't you... Yep, that'll work. That'll be great. And let's see here. All right, we'll go with all younger boys. All right, come on, Mo. Come on, Moses. Evan, why don't you sit here? All right. Now let's see here, who's going to be which part? Okay, let's see here. Okay, I'm going to have you be Job. Okay, you're going to be Job. One, two, there. Okay, and you want to be, you can be Bildad. See, I circled this part. Read through that. It's a little bit long. And you can be Eliphaz, and you get to be Zophar. Zophar hasn't said anything yet, so you don't have to say anything. You got the easiest part. That's perfect. You can just sit there and look handsome. All right? Will that work? Okay. So you're going to read that part when I get to that part. Just those two lines right there. Okay? So, this is in Job chapter number 3. And in Job chapter number 3, what does Job say? All right, and Eliphaz, his friend, responds and says,
"Fear God, and it will be okay."
Okay, and Job comes back and he says,
"But God is one aiming at me."
Okay, and then his friend Bildad speaks up with a lot to say here. Okay, so these are the friends and how Job has talked. Job in chapter 3, he says, "This hurts so bad, I want to die." And Eliphaz over here, he says, "Just fear God and it will be okay." And Job says, "Fear God, but God is the one that's aiming at me. This hurts." And Bildad says, "Well, if you really think that God is aiming at you, you sound like you think God is unjust. But God is really just. So if you do right, God will be just and he'll bless you." So that's a little bit how the argument, how the discussion has gone back and forth. And so far, Zophar hasn't said anything. We'll see him in a couple weeks probably, all right? All right, let's give him a round of applause. Good job. Thank you to Job and his friends. You guys can be seated. You guys may be seated. So that's a little bit of how the thought process goes for Job and his three friends so far, all right? And I want you to see that. I want you to understand the reasoning. Job is talking about incredible pain, And Eliphaz, hey, it's going to be okay. And Job's like, no, how can it possibly be okay? It feels like God's aiming at me. And Bildad says, well, if you're saying that, it kind of sounds like you think God is being unjust. God's always just. And if you would just do what's right, then God would justly, righteously bless you. That's the flow of thought that's going on when we come into chapters 9 and 10. We're only going to have time tonight to look at chapter number 9. We'll have to save chapter 10 for another time. I want you to understand a little bit how that's coming in. So we see chapter number 9 here and verse number 1. Then Job answered and said, I know it is so of a truth. He says, Bildad, I agree with you. You know, if a person is just, God blesses them. I know that God is a just God. I get that. I mean, Job is a guy who's walked with God. Job is a guy who knows what it's like to be blessed. Job is a guy that later on, when we're going to get, I think it's to chapter 27 or so, he's going to spend like a whole chapter defending the fact that God is just. Job believes that God is just. He really does believe that God is just. He knows that. He agrees with Bildad when he comes into chapter 9 and verse 2. I know it is so of a truth, but how should man be just with God? And that's kind of the question that's echoing in his mind. Remember what we said when we looked at that slide earlier? How do you interpret the friends? There's a key statement in each one of their different speeches. This is probably the key statement for this speech. How can a man be just with God? I know that God is righteous. I know that God always does what's right. Job's thinking, but you know what? I know that I haven't done anything wrong to deserve this. I know that I have done what is right. I am suffering without a cause here. So how can I possibly go to court, as it were, and debate this with God and come out just, come out as the winner in the court case with God? Now, that word just was kind of a little bit interesting to study out and to think about, because it can refer to when we think about being just with God and we think about our salvation and being righteous before God in that aspect of dealing with our sin. But I think it especially emphasizes the idea of Job saying, listen, if I were to go into a court case with God, God's just. I think that I'm just. I think that God needs to tell people that I'm just. How could I ever win that? How could I ever win that court case? And so tonight I'm going to give the title to our thoughts of this, taking God to court. Taking God to court. And Job's thinking a little bit of that idea. Have you ever thought about taking God to court? Have you ever thought about, listen, what I'm going through, is it maybe fair or isn't just? Or I wish God would handle it differently, and I wish I could take God to court and make him prove this or make him reply in this way. How's this going to work? And Job, being a righteous man, is stopping and he's thinking a little bit about this. Americans seem to be fascinated by court. Maybe because we're in court a lot, I don't know. But think about all the TV shows and the movies, or I guess they would be mostly TV shows, back through the generations, but that are court shows. Not advocating any of them, don't know much about them, but if you sat down and made a list of the ones that you've seen the advertisements for alone, happen to see in the news or whatever, there's a lot of shows about court. Court is a thing that is interesting. Job knows a little bit about court, and he's talking a little bit about this. How should a man be just with God? And so he's going to be asking that question. God's just, but so am I. So how can I possibly take God to court and find out what's going on in this matter? How can I possibly do this? And when he discusses this, in the first half of the chapter, he's really going to deal with the subject that God is so great. And then in the second half of the chapter, he's going to give like, well, maybe this could happen, but even if this went in my favor, this wouldn't work out. And well, maybe if this could work in my favor, well, but even this wouldn't work out. And he stops and he's thinking about this scenario, what it would be like. And so I want you to think about it, because there may be times in which you may not necessarily say, I'm going to take God to court. But do you ever wrestle with that a little bit? Is God handling this in the right way, in the right situations here?
And so let's walk through some of these verses and see a little bit about them. Verse number 3, he begins. If he, that's God, if God will contend with him, with man, he, man, cannot answer God 1 out of 1,000. Let's say that I had $1,000 in my hands right now, okay? I had $1,000. And you and I were to play a little bit of debate. We were to have a little bit of a game or something like that. And for every round you win, you get a dollar. For every round I win, I get a dollar. And we're going to see who has the most at the end. Job says, if God and I were doing this, when it comes to a court thing, I wouldn't even be able to get $1 out of 1,000 of them. If God put different questions to me, I wouldn't even be able to get one right out of 1,000. And it's interesting that he should say that, because by the time we get to the end of the book of Job, that's exactly what God does to Job. I didn't count them up that there's 1,000 necessarily, but he just hits Job with all of these. Have you considered this? Have you thought about this? How would you handle this situation? Would you be able to control this, Job? And Job's, I can't say anything here. Job says, how could I possibly take God to court? If he asks 1,000 questions, I wouldn't even get one of them right. Not even one. And you think that you're going to take God to court and say, God, you're running my life wrong? It's not going to work out too well. He goes on to explain verse number 4. He is wise in heart and mighty in strength, who hath hardened himself against him, against God, and has prospered here. And so Job is saying, listen, he's wise in heart. You're not going to outsmart God. He's so wise. And he's mighty in strength. You're not going to outmuscle God either. It's not going to be possible. You're not going to be successful in it. Verse number 5, which removes, God removes the mountains and they know not, which overturns them in his anger. God can just take a mountain and pook, just pick up Pike's Peak and move it, and you think you're going to take God to court and win? Which shaketh, verse 6, the earth out of her place and the pillars thereof tremble. God can cause a massive earthquake and just shake the thing, and you think you're going to take God to court and win? Verse 7, which commandeth the sun and it riseth not and sealeth up the stars. God can stop these things if he wants to. Seal up the stars, you know, put them in a little box and cover them up so they can't be seen. If you can cover up the stars, you'd have to be able to control all the stars. Can you even count all the stars? I can't even count all the stars. And God can put them all in a box and put the lid on them and nobody can see them, as it were. He can seal them all up. And you think you're going to take God to court? Job says, there's no way I can do that. It's not going to be possible here. I'm not going to win my court case. He goes on and he says, verse number 8 now, which alone spreadeth out the heavens and treadeth upon the waves of the sea. You think about the heavens and maybe picturing them as like a big sheet of plastic or a big scroll. Could you spread out the skies? What if I could provide for you a big sheet of plastic, a large sheet of plastic, and gave you this simple instruction, cover Coon Rapids with a sheet of plastic? I don't know that I could actually do that. I don't know if I could be successful in covering Coon Rapids with a sheet of plastic, let alone trying to spread out the entire heavens with one big sheet of the skies. I can't do that. Family had the privilege of being in the Atlantic Ocean. And here we were there in the morning, and it was kind of fun, and the water was the beach came down, and there was a little deep spot, and then it came out, there was a little sandbar out there, and so you could be out a good little ways, and yet it wasn't very deep, and we were enjoying it, just having fun playing in the water, and we came in after a while, and we ate lunch, and we went back out, and we noticed that in that amount of time, the waves had picked up, and the wind, and the tide was coming in, and whereas before, we could just be out there on that sandbar, and it wasn't deep, now it was deeper, and there were waves, and you know what? There wasn't one time where I was able to just stand there and just stop that wave. It just came right over me. It just crashed right over the top of me. And in fact, that made it fun, right? Had some of those little boards that you float on there, and you would try to ride what little bit of the waves. No, we weren't surfers. We didn't know enough about that, being from Minnesota, to handle something like that. But you know what? We just enjoyed the waves. I couldn't stop one wave. Not one. And you think that you're going to take God to court, who controls all of those waves? No way. He treads upon the waves. Verse 9, which maketh Arcturus, Orion, and Pleiades in the chambers of the south. Now here again, he's talking about the stars here. Arcturus, I believe, is the bear constellation. You can see the picture there. And then he talks about Orion, that warrior, and the Pleiades. Here's a little bit of some of the stars that are in that. And evidently, I'm not an expert on all of these stars, but evidently these are stars generally in the more northern hemisphere. And that's why, in the second part of verse number 9, then he just is very general and he says, and the chambers of the south, the stars of the southern hemisphere as well. God made all of those. God put all of those together. And you think that you're going to control God? You're going to take God to court? Verse 10, which doeth great things past finding out, yea, and wonders without number. He does, without number means there's not even an existent number to total them all up, to keep track of all of the awesome things that are out there. There's not even a number that exists to tally them all up there. God can do all of those incredible things. That's pretty amazing. But verse number 11 is interesting how then he kind of slightly shifts gears. Lo, he goeth by me, and I see him not. He passeth on also, but I perceive him not. You know, how much can you do without being noticed? There's some things that you can try to do to be sneaky. You can sneak into a sibling's room and be sneaky, or maybe into your parents' house and try to do some different things. But God can make all of those things. He can control the waves, the sun, the stars, make all of these different things, do all of these incredible things, and yet you can't see God. You can't even see Him. I try to do things, you know, maybe it's somebody's birthday, my wife's birthday or Mother's Day or something, and I'm trying to sneak this little gift in, and I'm trying to sneak the wrapping paper and all these different things, and it's just some little tiny small little thing that I'm doing, and I get caught and I forget to leave the scissors out and the tape and you know, or something like that, and it's like, well, what was this out? Did the kids leave this out? And you're trying to think of how not to lie and stuff like that, you know, and explain these different things, and all I'm trying to do is wrap one little present without being seen. And God can make all of those things and do control all of those things, and yet you can't even see Him. That's how great God is. And you think you're going to take God to court about the situations that you're upset about? Verse 12, behold, He taketh away. Who can hinder Him? Who will say unto Him, what doest thou? That verse has like got kids written all over it, doesn't it? I just think about that, you know. Somebody takes something away and somebody comes up and says, no, you can't take that away. Somebody takes something away and someone comes up, the parent comes up or the authority and says, what are you doing? He says, nobody can come up to God when God's taking something and say, God, you can't have that. Nobody can come up to God and do that. Nobody can come up to God when He's taking something and say, what are you doing here? Nobody has that authority over God. I mean, I just love the kind of the frank way that Job describes it here in these verses. If God will not withdraw His anger, the proud helpers do stoop under Him. When God is angry at a situation here, those that would help the proud, those who would be rebellious, would be allies of those who are rebellious and full of pride, they're going to be stooping. They're going to be bent under His power because He will bring the proud low. He has that much power. And after all of that power that He has described of God and all of that situation, now verse 14 brings in the point. How much less shall I answer Him and choose out my words to reason with Him? This isn't going to go too well if I take God to court. And so in the first half of the chapter here, he really brings out the greatness of his God. God is that great. The sun and the waves and the stars and all of these different things and all of that, God is invisible. What a great God. I can't take God to court on this matter. Make Him show that I'm just and innocent. But then in the last half of the chapter, not necessarily equal half, but the second portion of the chapter, I note in my Bible that there's a whole lot of the word if. And some of these different ifs, I put kind of an arrow beside them to kind of bracket them into some different points. Because I think that what Job is saying is, well, maybe I could do this, but even if I could do this, I don't know if I could do that. And even if I could do this, I don't know if I could do that. And even if I could do this, I don't know if I could do that. And he just kind of walks through all these different scenarios, and that's how he ends up the chapter, chapter number 9, as he talks about taking God to court. And so let me just remind you or show you, teach you a few of these ifs that he is talking about here, all right? Okay, so he said, how much less shall I answer him? So he's talking here in these verses about how could I even answer God? Verse 15, whom though I were righteous, yet would I not answer, but I would make supplication to my judge. In one sense, he starts off by saying, you know, there's no way that I could answer God. And he says, I wouldn't even be able to talk to God. All I'd be able to do is go before my judge and just beg. Just ask for favor. Just ask for pity. I don't have any right to go before God and demand that God would do anything. I can't stand before God and give an answer or beg. All I could do is just come and make supplication and please, would you do this? Because I'm nothing big. I'm nothing special. I'm nothing powerful. I'd have to plead for mercy. That's the first one. I have to plead for mercy. And even if that were possible, then he's going to ask this second question. He says, how would I ever believe that God answered me? So I'd have to plead for mercy, but if he did answer me, how would I know that God even answered me? That's an interesting thing. Look at him, verse number 16. If I had called and he had answered me, yet would I not believe that he had hearkened unto my voice? For he breaketh me with a tempest and multiplieth my wounds without cause. He will not suffer me to take my breath, but filleth me with bitterness. It's an interesting statement. When you first look at it, you think, boy, Job, you're saying some pretty outlandish things about God here. I mean, I don't know that, he says in verse 16, I don't know that I believe that God was even listening to my voice. And the reason is because of look at all these things that God is doing to me. In verse number 17, we say, Job, you're accusing God of multiplying your wounds without cause. Do you know what? Job is absolutely 100% right. That's exactly what God said that he was doing. Go back to chapter 2. Back to chapter 2. Verse number 3. Chapter 2, verse 3. And the Lord said unto Satan, hast thou considered my servant Job, that there is none like him in the earth, a perfect and an upright man, one that feareth God and escheweth evil? And still he holdeth fast his integrity, although thou movest me against him to destroy him without cause. See, God himself said Job didn't deserve this. And so back in 9 and verse number 17, Job says, God is doing these things and I didn't deserve them. And that's exactly what God had said. Job's not unjustly accusing God here. He will not suffer me to take my breath. Remember one of the previous chapters, he talked about, I don't even have time to swallow my saliva. I feel like just one bad thing after another is hounding me here. Here he uses a similar idea. I don't even have time to take my breath. And bitterness isn't necessarily the idea that we think of bitterness as just a sourness and a horrible attitude, but just the pain of it, the agony that I'm going through. So he starts off and he says, I just have to plead for mercy, but even if that were possible, how would I believe that God answered me? And even if that were possible, number 3, how can I appoint a time for God to show up? How can I appoint a time for God to show up? Look at verse 19. If I speak of strength, lo, he is strong. And if of judgment, who shall set me a time to plead? Who's going to go up to God's door, knock on the door and say, God, here's your summons. You have to be in court tomorrow at 8 a.m. And if you're not in court, God, tomorrow at 8 a.m., you're in trouble and I'm going to hold you accountable. Who's going to set God a time where God has to show up? Who's going to hold him accountable? Who's going to make God show up tomorrow at 8 a.m. in court? Job's just thinking about this. Nobody can make God show up if God doesn't want to show up. Nobody has the power to enforce that. And so he says, how could anyone ever appoint a time for him to show up? Oh, and even if that were possible, number four, how would I ever be able to justify myself before God with my mouth? Verse 20. If I justify myself, mine own mouth shall condemn me. If I say I am perfect, it shall also prove me perverse. He says, so if I get into the courtroom there and I'm trying to defend my righteousness, something's going to happen and I'm going to say something wrong and I'm going to just show that I really am a sinner. Because I am a sinner. Even though I didn't do anything wrong to deserve this in specific, I know I'm a sinner, and Job admits that. And so he says, how would I ever be able to justify myself before God with my mouth? Well, and even if that were possible, here's now the next thing he says, how would it change anything since God destroys the perfect and the wicked? How would it change anything? And notice these couple of next verses are a little bit challenging to think through. Though I were perfect, verse 21, yet would I not know my soul, I would despise my life. This is one thing, therefore I said it, he destroyeth the perfect and the wicked. If the scourge slay suddenly, he will laugh at the trial of the innocent. The earth is given into the hand of the wicked. He covereth the faces of the judges thereof. If not, where? And who is he? And so Job is kind of saying, you know, okay, so I go to court and I stand before God and somehow I get God to come. Not that I can make him, but I get him to come. And somehow I'm standing there with my mouth and I'm defending myself and somehow I don't say anything that makes myself wrong. But even if I could be shown to be perfect, God still allows difficult things to happen to perfect people. Though I were perfect, he talks about that. He uses the word perfect in 21 and 22. He destroys the perfect and the wicked. And at first glance, when you read those words, God destroys the perfect with the wicked, at first glance, you think, oh, can you believe Job would say something like that? Can you believe that Job would have the boldness to say something? That sounds like he's really crashing in upon God. He's really slamming God here, that God just does mean things to perfect people and to wicked people. But isn't this interesting? Let's go back to chapter number 2, and verse number 10. Chapter 2 and verse number 10. We'll see this here. But he said unto her, he's talking to his wife, who's told him to curse God. He says, thou speakest as one of the foolish women speaketh. What? Shall we receive good at the hand of God, and shall we not receive evil? In all this, did not Job sin with his lips? He said, we receive good and evil from the hand of the Lord. Job's a perfect man, and he's saying it back there. Go back to chapter 1 and verse number 21. And he said, naked came I out of my mother's womb, and naked shall I return thither. The Lord gave, and the Lord hath taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And he says, listen, God did this to me when I was perfect here. And so really, Job, when he makes this statement here back in chapter 9, though it's a statement that kind of surprises us at first, and there's a lot more we could dig in and study out here, really it's consistent with what he's already said about God. You know what? Sometimes difficult things do happen to righteous people, to innocent people. Godly Christians do get hit by drunk drivers. And dedicated missionaries do pass away of cancer. And godly Christians are slaughtered in persecuting Christians, or persecuting countries here. And if it seems hard for us to accept that God would allow that to happen to perfect ones, just remember what God allowed to happen to the perfect one, Jesus Christ, who suffered incredibly and didn't deserve any of it. So Job says here, God destroys the perfect and the wicked. There's an aspect in which that can be true here as we think about it. But then he goes on. He says, maybe I could just pretend to forget it all and put on a smile. Maybe I could just forget about it all and put on a smile. Verse 25. Now my days are swifter than a post. I got to stop there. Swifter than a post. Now, if you think about a post here, I don't think of too many telephone posts or fence posts as being fast. The word post was referring to the post office, to Brett, and the speed there of the postman. All right, you think about the book of Esther, and when the king and Haman made this law, they sent it out by the post. And you think of Pony Express, you know, and they get on the horse and they go as fast as they can across the empire to try to carry that message. That's what he's talking about. And by the way, you'll notice when he talks about speed here, he gives one of the fastest areas of fastest things on land, fastest things in the water, and then one of the fastest things in the air. Can you see all three of those in the next verse? All right. So he says, now my days are swifter than a post, the postman. They flee away. They see no good. They are passed away as the swift ships. Okay, so that's in the water. And as the eagle, that's in the air, that hasteth to the prey. My life is going by very, very quickly. I'm going to die soon. Verse 27. If I say I will forget my complaint. I'm going to stop whining about this matter here. I will leave off my heaviness and comfort myself. I'll put on a smile, you know. I'll just let this go here. I am afraid of all my sorrows. I know that thou will not hold me innocent. If I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? So Job says, you know what, if I just decide I'm not going to struggle through this anymore, I'm just going to smile, I'm just going to be happy, and I'm just going to bear the difficulty that I go through. He said, even that, would that turn out well? Verse 29, I want to read that to you again. He says in verse number 29, if I be wicked, why then labor I in vain? In verse 28 and 29, he's talking about, you know, even if I drop my case right now, you're going to say, but you did. God will say, but Job, you did take me to court. And that wasn't right. You aren't going to hold me innocent of this. And in verse 29, if I really were wicked, why would I be fighting to talk with you, Bildad and Zophar and Eliphaz? If I sinned, why wouldn't I just admit it? Why would I go through all of this drama here to try to prove it? So maybe I should just pretend to forget it and put on a smile. But even if I could do that, I know that you wouldn't let me be innocent. So he comes in verse 30 and 31 and he says, even if I could do that, how could I ever wash myself clean enough? Verse 30, if I wash myself with snow water and make my hands never so clean, yet shalt thou plunge me in the ditch, and mine own clothes shall abhor me. Snow. We were talking about that at our table today, weren't we? And we were talking about the folks from Nigeria experiencing snow and thinking about the whiteness and the beauty of snow and what little kid hasn't opened their mouth and tried to eat that snow. And sometimes we think about, you know, licking the snow, and every little mom says, yeah, but you know, air pollution, and there's really all sorts of germs in that, and you shouldn't lick the snow and stuff like that, you know. But we naturally tend to think about snow as being white and pure and stuff like that. He says, man, if I could wash my life with snow water so I was all clean, he said, it would be, though, in comparison with God, as if God took me and threw me down in a slimy pit in a ditch. And I'd come out like some of the kids after playing a good hard day out back in the yard, covered head to toe in dirt and mud. My own clothes would abhor me. My own clothes would find me disgusting. In verse number 32, he comes into the last section, but if that's not possible, take away the rod so I can speak up front with you, not be afraid. Here's what he says, verse 32, for he is not a man as I am, that I should answer him and we should come together in judgment. Neither is there any daysman betwixt us that might lay his hand upon us both. Let him take his rod away from me, and let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him. But it is not so with me. He says he's not a human being that I can just stand there and take God to court and discuss these things with God. I need a daysman. I looked up that word, the English word daysman, and evidently the word day at one point in time was referred to like a day. It was like a specific, like a day in court. So if I understand it right, a daysman would be the man for that day in court, the man to help you when you come to that day. We would say a lawyer, we would say an umpire, we would say a mediator, somebody like that. And I think of two kids playing on the playground and they're not getting along, and so the teacher brings them up there, and this kid's standing here, and this kid's standing here, and what does the teacher do? the hands on the two shoulders and says, now you need to be nice to this kid and you need to say nice things back to this kid. And can you guys say you're sorry and get along here? And they put a hand on both shoulders. And that's what he says in verse 33, that might lay his hand upon us both. Is there anybody that can stand between God and man and put his hands on both of their shoulders and try to resolve this thing? By the way, this is kind of the passage, this is the idea kind of where many look at this and think about Jesus Christ. Because there's an aspect here in which he says, I need some way to connect with God. I need this connection. I'm a man. He's God. But God can't stoop to my level. I need someone that's able to connect with both. I need someone who is both God and man. And that's only Jesus Christ. There's one God and one mediator between God and man, the man Christ Jesus. So he says, I need this umpire. And then he says, verse 34 and 35, you can tell we're almost done. Let him take his rod away from me. Let not his fear terrify me. Then would I speak and not fear him. He said, if God were to walk into the courtroom, I would be so afraid. I wouldn't know what to say. I would just be scared that if I was dishonorable to God, if I said anything wrong to God, I'm standing in the court before the God of heaven. I wouldn't even be able to speak before God. I wouldn't even know what to say. I mean, isn't that just an amazingly different view than our world today? I don't have any problem. I can just walk in before God's presence someday and get into heaven on my own good works. And here's a man who's walked with God, perfect man and upright and hates evil and is one of the godliest men of all the Bible here. And he says, hey, if I stood before God, I wouldn't even be able to speak. I'd be so afraid. God would have to take away anything that would cause me to be afraid in order for me to even be able to open my mouth and be able to say anything to defend my cause. It's kind of an interesting chapter. And so he's talking here about this idea of taking God to court. Do you really think that you can win a court case with God? Do you want to argue with God about how God is treating you? Read through chapter number 9. God is that great. He makes all this, and yet he is invisible. And if you could do this, you probably couldn't do that. But even if you could do this, you couldn't do that. But even if you could do this, you wouldn't be able to do that. And on and on and on and on and on he goes through the whole second part of that chapter. And you want to file a complaint before God and say, God, this, you didn't treat me right. This isn't being handled right here. You think you're going to get God in a corner and make him admit that you're right and that he is wrong in that way? God is so great that we cannot win in this. So the answer here is not going to be taking God to court in hopes of getting a victory of God and getting God to admit that he was wrong in how he handled our situation. That's not going to be the answer that's ultimately going to happen here in the book of Job. But there are times in which we wrestle through the situations and wrestle through what we're going through, and we kind of feel like we wish we could take God to court. And Job says, no, wouldn't work out so well. And so tonight, as we walk through these 35 verses, I trust that you are brought small like Job was and see in your own heart and life, that's not the way to resolve some of these things. You can't take God to court. Father, I do thank you for the opportunity to look at your greatness and your majesty here as we ponder how we would respond. Lord, just because we don't understand things, just because maybe we wouldn't want them to happen the way they do, doesn't mean that we can somehow get you in a corner and make you admit that somehow it was wrong. Lord, help us to respond in the right way. Thank you for Job's wisdom in this matter. Help it to help us to be wise as well. In Jesus' name, amen.
Visit us at 11164 Hanson Boulevard or online at coonrapidsbaptist.org.